All right, it is the Tea Podcast. Today we have Chaz Roberts, a Lafayette attorney or Lafayette-based attorney and host of Law Have Mercy Podcast. So Chaz Roberts is a, like I said, a Lafayette-based personal injury attorney and social media content creator at Chaz Roberts Law. He has a podcast called Law Have Mercy, and on several social media channels, he simplifies legal jargon and empowering people to know their rights. And beyond law, Chaz Roberts is a marathon enthusiast, having completed 3 world majors last year or in the past few years. Also punches in the ring as part of his 100-hour journey, and coaches his kids in sports and often found in the ballpark on weekends. So that is Chaz Roberts. Hang around. We're going to be asking a bunch of law questions and getting to know Chaz on the way. So, yes, stick around. Alrighty. So, Chaz, tell us a little bit about you. Are you originally from Lafayette?
Actually, I am from the metropolis of Cecilia, Louisiana.
Cecilia, Yeah. Wow.
I don't think there's a stoplight there, last time I checked.
Maybe a caution light?
Maybe a caution light.
Okay.
Maybe, definitely a four-way stop.
Okay. What got you from Cecilia to Lafayette?
Man, so most people work in the Lafayette area from Cecilia. So, you know, I grew up coming here. I just didn't live here. And after law school, I went to LSU. I got a job here. Somehow convinced somebody to hire me, and it brought me all the way back to Lafayette. And, you know, I thought I'd be in Baton Rouge, New Orleans, brought me to Lafayette, and I've been here for 15 years.
Nice. Yeah. Well, let me go ahead and get my presenting sponsor in real quick. I almost forgot to do that. So Chase Group Construction, they take the lead and become your one point of contact for the entire design build process. So if you're looking to build something or renovate it, check them out, chasegroupconstruction.com. They're great local people. And yes, please support them.
Got to get those bills paid, man.
Yeah, man. and Chase, he's a great guy. So so you got a job in Lafayette.
Yeah.
And instead of Baton Rouge, you would feel like that would be like the go-to mecca of attorney land. Like that's the capital. That's where all the
two law schools are there.
Yeah. Like it's the biggest place to practice law. Why not venture that way?
Well, you know, it was, I got this opportunity to meet a well-known defense lawyer here, and he offered me a job. And so it brought me back here. And I thought it was close to home. And I didn't really think I would be here, but it worked out. And, you know, a lot of my friends are from here. My family's from here. And so I ended up, and I was like, man, I couldn't, like in hindsight, I couldn't see myself in Baton Rouge. You know, Baton Rouge was such a special place with LSU and everything else. It gets way less cool after you graduate.
Oh, right? I bet.
I mean, it's cool for like 7 weekends a year, you know, for LSU games. But other than that, it's, you know, it doesn't have the same vibrancy as Lafayette. It doesn't have the same culture. It doesn't have festivals every weekend.
Yeah.
Boiled crawfish are hard to come by and everything else.
That's strange to be, you know, in the middle between Lafayette and New Orleans, that place feels relatively, I don't want to say void of culture, but it has that sense, like Lafayette is this cultural mecca, and then you got New Orleans, where we all know is like the biggest touristy place for Louisiana. And anybody that's out of the state thinks that Louisiana is just New Orleans. And so Baton Rouge just kind of falls in the middle and is known for LSU, really. Yeah. That's all it's known for.
Yeah. And you know, when I went to LSU, they would say some people thought I talked funny. And so, you know, being a Cajun, from Cajun country, and then anytime you would see Baton Rouge being promoted, LSU is go GEAUX.
Mm-hmm.
You see the clips like for game day, they're eating boiled crawfish or boudin or something like that. And I was like, well, wait a second. That's not really a Baton Rouge thing. You got to go 40 miles that way, you know? Yeah,
across the pond.
Across the pond. I don't know, man. I think it's the government, like just the stronghold of the government there. And I don't know. It is sort of an area where people from North Louisiana come, New Orleans come, and it doesn't have its real own identity besides kind of the LSU thing.
Yeah, and being the capital and all.
And being the capital, yeah. You know? But look, honestly, I liked Baton Rouge. I loved it. There are some beautiful areas of Baton Rouge, a lot of good people there. I can tell you, like, the Louisiana Marathon, getting back to the marathon running, is like, it runs through Baton Rouge, beautiful. Beautiful oak trees and scenic routes and flowers. It's a cool run.
So whenever you were in high school, was this a dream of yours to become an attorney?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I wanted to be a lawyer since I was probably 10 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why? What got you to want to be a lawyer?
Man, it's so funny because the first time I actually met a lawyer, I was in college. I was my business law professor, was the first actual lawyer that I met. But dating back to I was 10 years old, I wanted to be a lawyer, which is insane.
Did you see it on TV?
Like, yeah, obviously I watched a lot of law movies like My Cousin Vinny, The Firm, A Few Good Men. I was into like legal movies, but I always kind of defended people. I always like stuck up for people. I was all when the teacher would have something and try to pull up a pop quiz, I would start arguing with them.
Oh, you were providing a deposition up in high school. Yeah,
I always gravitated to like representing people or sticking up for people. Yeah. I didn't even know the term representing people at the time, but like sticking up for people. And so I just always had in my mind I want to be a lawyer. Luckily, I guessed right. A lot of people become lawyers and hate it. I guessed right. I was meant for this. I couldn't see myself doing anything else. I would be a terrible salesman. I'd be terrible at any other thing but practicing law.
Really?
So I guessed right.
That's crazy. Yeah. A lot of people don't have that early intuition of what they want to be and stick with it. Like my little boy, he's 7. Not even a year ago, he wanted to be a cop. But over the Christmas break, we went and pulled over at the Lafayette Airport and just pulled into the grass and right there by the edge of the strip and watched airplanes take off above us and just kind of watched. And there were some military airplanes practicing. And now he wants to be a pilot.
Yeah.
So like his thought process changed. Like, oh, maybe cop is not cool anymore. Maybe being a pilot. And then, you know, I took him to the airport, got like one of those visitor's passes and got to meet some pilot and some captains and went inside the cockpit and like, oh yeah, now he wants to be a pilot. So it's interesting that you being such a young age, almost the age that my little boy is now, knowing that you wanted to be an attorney.
I wouldn't say that that's a very common phenomenon as somebody that age. But, you know, now, like, looking back on my career and just seeing where my classmates ended up, like, we have some that are business owners. We have some, I mean, you can get into intellectual property. You can be into family law. You can be a lobbyist. You can be a politician. Like, you can be an FBI agent. There's so many different areas you can go into by learning the law. When you go to law school, you really don't learn how to be a lawyer. You learn the law. You learn how to think like a lawyer. And so it's an expensive lesson. 3 years of law school, it's probably tripled since I've been there in the tuition price. But I would encourage people, what it shouldn't be is someone gets out with a degree and doesn't know really what to do to go to law school. That's a bad move. I've seen people that have done that, and that has not worked out well. But if you are interested in learning how the law works, because think about it, the law affects us all.
Mm-hmm.
If you're starting a business right here, you need to know operating agreement, contracts. You know, if you are looking at buying a property, you need to interact with a lawyer to help you do that. If you're trying to change the way things are done in your town, you need a handle on the law. So it affects all of us. And so having an idea and understanding the law is truly a great skill to possess.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that I found a way how to run a business actually practicing law.
Okay. So I got to ask you about I feel like it's the elephant in the room whenever it comes to attorneys or law or anything like that.
Bring it.
Is the Morris Barts and the Gordon Get It Done, you know, snapping a finger and, you know, all that. Those are personal injury lawyers, attorneys. And they have very big names. There's also one in New Orleans area. And the only reason I know this New Orleans-based attorney is because of his commercial that he had with Big Frida.
Juan LaFonta.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I don't even know this guy's business. I just know his name. I know he appeared in the music video, but that was such a catchy tune that I can't get Juan LaFonta out of my head.
You will not catch me doing a commercial with Big Frida. All right.
I mean,
spoiler alert.
I'm just saying it works. You never know. It worked for him. But so what do you make of those? I guess I'm gonna call them huge success stories of attorneys that are, you know, the billboard attorneys, the people that you see on the commercials. You know, you drive through Louisiana and you see all these billboards of, you know, mainly Morris Bart. Then you got Gordon, and you got a couple of, like, I would say medium sized firms, like I think it's DeBosiers. I can't think of the full name. It's two guys. Then there's the Glenn Armentor. I think he's local. You know, you see a few of those billboards, but like the two that you see are Morris Bart and Gordon. Like, what do you make of those?
Well, that's a very complicated question.
Okay.
All right. So number one, they're doing it for it. It must work.
Yeah, right? Something's working.
And they're spending millions of dollars.
I mean, he's got
billboards.
Gordon's got this couple of buildings. He's got one right across the street from his one in Baton Rouge, and he's got these huge flags, and then he's got, you know, Lafayette and all these other locations, but it's crazy.
Yeah, so I do things a little differently, right?
How so?
I don't even have a sign at the road.
Okay.
So I'm only word of mouth, and I have my social media. Social media is a very low-cost way of getting your message out there. One of the big things that I'm passionate about is like changing the perception of lawyers, particularly personal injury, which is what I do. So, you know, there's so much stigma because of the billboards and commercials that whenever you say, like, I do personal injury law, they automatically assume ambulance chaser, billboard, commercial, Morris Bar. Oh, you're Morris Bar. No, that's not me. It's a different format. It's a different philosophy. It's a different mindset. Mm-hmm. Okay. But while I'm not a fan of it, and while I try to change the perception, they have served a purpose by educating people in a way that if you are hurt, okay, by somebody else's fault, you have a right to recovery. All right. So they have done some good by educating the public. Also, if they're building these buildings and they're putting these buildings, they could afford the marketing, it means that a lot of people are getting wrecks. A lot of people are getting hurt.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
Okay. And they've also done a good job of educating people that insurance companies are not your friend. Everybody is mandated to pay insurance. You have to pay insurance in order to drive.
And it goes up.
It keeps going up.
And you still got to pay. And I'm like, I don't want to pay anymore. Like, I'm done.
And then what happens is you get in a wreck, and let's say you had State Farm or Allstate, and you've paid your premiums for 20 years. Mm-hmm. You've kept the same provider. They will nickel and dime you.
Oh, I've experienced it.
Refuse, delay, and do all these things to avoid paying you what you deserve. So while I am not a fan of every single billboard being associated with the same thing I'm doing, I'm not automatically going to dismiss it because there are other problems, okay? People are getting hurt. We got bad drivers, and we got terrible insurance companies. So it's kind of a necessary. Look, lawyers would go out of business if insurance companies just did what they were supposed to do.
Right.
Right? So that's why you see so many lawyers, and that's why you see so many people trying to get cases, because insurance companies are a problem, right?
So I guess
I don't know if I gave you an answer.
No, that's good.
But
that's
it's a gray area, and I don't want to automatically dismiss those people that, like, there's a lot of good lawyers that work for them. There's a lot of good people who are employed by them. It's not for me.
So you mentioned something just a second ago there, that there's a lot of people working for them, a lot of attorneys working for them. It is my understanding, and I can't even remember where I got this understanding from, is that they've gotten to a point, you know, the Morris Barton, the Gordons, that they are no longer an attorney in a sense. They have an attorney firm. They have...
Right. Gordon McKernan is not working on your case.
Right.
Morris Barton is not working on your case.
Right. They are essentially the marketing department.
Correct.
That's what that is. It's the face of the company.
Yeah.
I mean, he's making TikTok videos about his family, his billboards. They just got a new dog.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, so this is what's going on.
It works. Look, we're talking about it right now.
I know.
It works.
But it works. It's one of those things that...
But the difference is if you hire my firm, you get me.
Yeah.
You get me, you get my staff, but you get me. I work on every single case.
So that's, I guess I want to, now that we talked about the big guys, what does I'm going to call your firm a boutique firm.
Yeah, that's a good term.
Okay. It's smaller, but more intimate, more personal.
Yes.
Okay. That's how I look at a boutique. Sometimes a little bit more expensive, but in the case of the billboard lawyers, I'm pretty sure they probably have a higher price tag. So I don't know that for a fact, but so what differentiates you from the billboard lawyers and yourself?
Because the dude with the sign on the wall is the same guy that's working on your case. So there's more accountability, right? And so you can reach me. You got my phone number. Or you come sit down in my office. I met with two clients before I was here on cases, right? I'm the guy. You talk to me. And so you get all of our resources and the people that work within our office. We get paralegals, and I have another lawyer who is brilliant that works with me alongside, but I work on every single case. And so when you have your name and your reputation, your integrity, I'm signing all that on the dotted line next to you, and we are together. We are working on your case together. So I think it's a better level of customer service.
Okay.
I think it's a better level of service. I think the results are better.
How long is a typical case? I know that varies probably drastically, but like, so personal injury, just in that scope of practice, let's say somebody rear ends me and, you know, I'm not like disabled from it, but you know, it hurt, obviously. Let's say they hit me going, you know, 30, 40 miles an hour. I don't know what the speed would be to really get injured, but you know, we have to go through all the legal stuff. Like what would that look like? Like let's say if I wanted to file a case, like what would that look like from calling you to potentially, hopefully, if I'm in the right, getting paid out?
This is the two words that are the most common used words by lawyers.
Okay.
That everyone in the general public hates.
It depends.
It depends.
Oh my God.
It depends. Okay. Because it all depends on how hurt you are. Is your injury gonna resolve in 2 weeks, 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years? Right? So you don't really want to close a case while that person is still treating. Because you want the insurance company to pay full value for everything. Mm. Okay, now sometimes we can't, the person's going to be treating for the rest of their life. So you get a future life care plan. And then there's an opportunity to settle that case before the termination of treatment. But yeah, why would I settle? If you're still hurting 10 months in, why would I settle your case? I want to find out what it's going to take to fix you, to get you as close to 100% as possible. So some cases we close in 30 days, 60 days, some 2 years. It just depends on how much treatment. And I would say the longer the case, usually the more valuable the case, because that means more treatment.
Yeah.
Do some lawyers sit on cases that people have finished treating and they sit on it for another year? Absolutely. All right. Mm-hmm. They're good teachers. They're good policemen. They're bad teachers. They're bad policemen. They're good lawyers. They're bad lawyers.
Okay. Okay.
Right.
Well, I have some more questions. I do have to get a sponsor in right now. So it is that time to tell you about the Music Academy of Acadiana. So they are Acadiana's top choice for music lessons. So if you're looking to learn music, or if you have children that you may want to send them to take some music classes, check them out. They have tons of different instruments. So piano, guitar, drums, violin, saxophone, flute. If they have a good voice, you can help them fine tune their voice. And also audio production, basically like this podcast. You know, I have a mixer in front of me. I have a computer. I have another device that I have to do a switchboard with. And so audio production is a lot of that background stuff. So that might be something like, if you're not a musically inclined person, but you can listen to music, you enjoy music, you can help make it sound better. They teach you that there. They have several experienced instructors, and that caters to students of all ages and styles. So if you're an old guy, a young guy, or a girl, or a woman, and you have a certain musical style, doesn't matter what it is, they teach it. They've even sent students to college and to major music competitions. They've appeared on TV shows like American Idol and The Voice. It's founded by UL Lafayette Music School graduate Tim Benson, who is also in an emo cover band called The Criers. I've listened to them, and let me tell you, they sound just like the bands that they are covering. So check them out. They are, like I said, locally founded and have been a top music school since 2016. Ultimately, their goal is to make music lessons fun, educational, and to help foster the next generation of musicians and creative thinkers. And their website, musicacademyacadiana.com. Check them out. Okay.
Ben, you're killing it. You're asking me some good questions, man.
Hey, man, I'm trying, man. I still got a few more in the chamber here. So now I'm curious, what does a dollar figure look like? Because I will be honest here. Whenever I'm driving in Lafayette, especially Lafayette, on Johnston, Ambassador, or Cali Saloon, and if I'm ever going through an intersection, one of those dangerous intersections, I'm always in the back of my mind, is today the day that I'm going to have to remember one of those phone numbers?
Yeah.
You know, there's one phone number that I can tell you right now I can remember right off the bat because it's one of my favorite numbers, and I'd probably end up dialing that. If I know your number, I'll dial that. But my question is like, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, if I get hit today, how much money could I potentially get? And I know you're going to say it depends, because we just got through saying the length of case could be 30 days, could be 10 years. But I guess an estimation, an average, or like, what does that look like monetarily? Like, how does that work? Like,
it's a great question, and I will not say it depends.
Okay, good.
Okay. There's really sort of three factors that we look at when we take on a case. All right. Number one, liability. Like, is somebody else at fault? Okay. Or was it a he said, she said, or was it a clear, like, let's just say in your example, somebody rear ends you. That's the cleanest type of fault you can get. So you got liability. All right. Number two, insurance. How much insurance is available? If somebody hit you and they have a minimum policy, which is $15,000, you could sever an arm, a leg, you can be paralyzed. And if there's only $15,000 available, that's all you're going to get. All right. That's why it's important to carry uninsured motorist coverage. And I could go on a whole rant on that. Right. But when you get uninsured motorist coverage, you're protecting yourself against other people.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, this may be a news flash to you, but people who drive recklessly oftentimes don't take care of their financial responsibilities. Okay. So the people who cause the most harm have the least amount of insurance or no insurance, right? 6 out of 10 people driving around Lafayette have minimum coverage or no coverage. That should worry. That should concern you.
That is crazy. And yeah. I'm not saying that I didn't think that, because I've been in situations where the other driver didn't have insurance and I was like a new driver. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So insurance available is a consideration, because that really caps what you can recover, right? And that's why those same billboards you were talking about, they're standing on 18-wheelers, because 18-wheelers have to carry commercial limits, which is far in excess of the 15,000, $750 or $1 million and above, wow. Right? So that's why more insurance available, more lucrative case,
Right? No wonder Gordon's standing on top of an 18-wheeler.
That's right.
I mean, that'd be the case to go for.
He's not standing on top of a
Honda.
A 1996 Neon, right?
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
standing on top of an 18-wheeler, a commercial business, requirements. That's federally mandated, okay? So we talk about fault. Somebody else has to be at fault, okay? And the reason why the fault is important is because even if it's 50-50, you can recover. If it's 50% your fault, 50% someone else's fault, you can still recover, but you can only recover half, 50%.
Okay.
Okay, so that's a consideration. Number two is insurance. How much is insurance is available? Okay. You can't control what they have, but you can control what you have. And that's why I should, before I leave this podcast, you will call your agent and say, I want uninsured motorist coverage.
I think I have it.
I want to up it. All right. I want to increase it. Right. All right. Number three is damages. How hurt are you? Okay. Is it a soft tissue injury that resolves in six weeks? Do you need neck surgery? Do you need back surgery? Do you need an ankle surgery? How badly are you hurt? Because when you plug all three of those things together, it gives us a case evaluation. And we're looking at that. The insurance company's looking at it. And ultimately, a judge or a jury may look at that one day and just have to decide, what's this case worth? And then you also factor in time away from work. You factor in pain and suffering. Pain and suffering is usually determined by the extent of the injury and how it has affected you and your loved ones. Okay, so I can't give you a good answer, but I can tell you cases range from $3,000, $5,000 to $5 million and everywhere in between. And I'm saying $5 million, it could be beyond that. It could be $100 million, but everywhere in between.
Mm-hmm.
But most cases, which are typical soft tissue type cases, are in the five figures.
Okay. So what is, and I'm going to dig into your history here, what is the largest case that you've ever won?
Just recently, this is not the largest case. Just recently, we went to Texas, and a day after picking the jury, we got over $3.25 million.
Wait, so this is a case that you were involved in or like directly connected with?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So multi-million dollar cases. I can't disclose all of them because of confidentiality agreements, but several cases in the seven figures.
Dude.
Yeah.
So how many cases like that have you had in your life as an attorney?
By the way, I just want to mention one thing. Like, I don't think anyone out there should want a seven-figure case, right? Because
that would be bad.
Because that would be bad.
Yeah.
That means that you had to have some type of surgery or some type of really a bad hit to your life, and you're not the same person you were before. So I wouldn't wish this on anyone.
Yeah.
Right. It's and that's why I'm real careful to talk about results, because, and I think it's tacky when a lot of people post results. I do sometimes in rare situations, because people need to know what I do and that I'm capable of that. But there's a price to pay for that. And that is someone's life. That's someone's family. That is someone who will never be the same potentially. They paid the price for that. And so I'm real careful about publishing some of that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm competing. You mentioned it earlier. I'm competing with guys that spend $1 million, $2 million a month in marketing. And I'm just a little bitty old fish here doing good work.
Yeah.
Right. And so you have to be in that flow somehow. I'm sorry, I cut off your question.
No, so I was going to say that it's interesting to see the commercials for these bigger lawyers, these bigger attorney firms, touting my lawyer got me, $300,000, or my lawyer got me, $900,000. And I'm like, man, that sounds like amazing. And of course they're on video standing, they look healthy and look
paid. Actor.
Probably actor. So. Yes, you're right.
Because what I always say is, I was like, you made $2 million? Cool. Turn around. Let me see your scar.
Yeah, I'd like to. Right. That's a curious phenomenon. Is this, and going back to being on the road, being in traffic, I'm always thinking, you know, those people that get those big payouts, like, what type of injury did they have to go through
significant
to get that? And I'm thinking to myself, man, maybe it isn't that much. Like, because I, you know, the whole joke is if you get hit from behind, you know, you come out and you go, my neck, my back, you know, you look sore,
yeah,
and thinking that you're going to, you know, cut a $500,000 check out of it. Something like that may not even be worthy of a thing. Like, I don't know. Is that even a...
No, you got to understand, these insurance companies are billion-dollar companies, mm-hmm, okay? And there's only like 12 of them that write insurance in Louisiana. So these are billion-dollar sophisticated companies. They're not just cutting checks willy-nilly, like, here you go. Like,
they're in the business of making money.
And the less money they pay out, the more money they make, the more money. Do you know how insurance works? They take a bunch of premiums and they take that money and invest it in other things, in stocks and mutual funds and treasury bonds, and they make money on
like
money,
a bank.
There's no Warren Buffett is a big fan of insurance companies, and it's not by coincidence, right?
Sure.
So they are not just cutting checks. In fact, they're saying you get no money. And it takes a strong lawyer as an advocate that has the ability to file a lawsuit and bring the case in front of a jury of their peers. It's an amazing responsibility. It's an amazing power that we have. Just little old me from Cecilia, Louisiana, I can take on Chevron and Shell or Allstate or State Farm or some of the biggest corporations in the world. Their CEOs make $30 million a year, $40 million a year, and I can bring them into little bitty St. Martin Parish or Lafayette Parish, and we could call 12 jurors, and we can put them in the box, and they can decide if that company is responsible to pay this nice person. And it's a really cool responsibility. And it's a good kind of balance, you know, like the scales of justice, right? It's a good way of keeping people accountable in society, right? So we talked a lot about the stigma, the bad stuff you see with people collecting checks and stuff like that, but that's just a marketing ploy and an advertisement. I hate, what I really despise about that is it takes away from all the good people that I represent that were trying to live their version of the American dream, mm-hmm, bringing their kids to soccer practice, working hard in the all field, just trying to get by. And somebody hurt them. And they took time away from work, and they missed work, and now they're behind on their bills, and now they have medical bills they need to pay for, and, you know, their wife's upset with them. They have no patience to deal with their kids because they're always in pain. And on and on and on. I mean, can you imagine when the mother or father of a family unit gets significantly hurt? And where do they go? They need to be at least put back to where they were before financially, because they've missed the last two or three mortgage payments because they have no job.
Yeah.
And they're hurt and they can't afford. Where do they go? They find a good lawyer. Good lawyer who can stand up, knows the law, understands the process, understands the bad guys, and can tell their story. And I think that's a really cool thing, right? And so you're going to see the negative stereotypes, but man, there's so many good people who never asked to be in this position.
Yeah.
And they need representation. And they're going against some beasts, right?
Yeah, and typically it's the people that don't want to have to call a lawyer, that don't know what is capable of being returned back to them, that oftentimes, in at least my perspective of it, would be the ones to get screwed over, because it's your career injury people, like the people that are somehow chronically always in an accident, are always filing lawsuits and have this money just coming in from you know, suits. But it's the people that have never dealt with that, that typically will end up getting screwed over.
Let me give you an example of why that happens.
Yeah, I'm interested.
Okay, so good person, honest, hard worker, taxpayer, has never made a claim in their entire life, gets hurt in a wreck, okay? They shake it off. They don't go to the emergency room, they go to urgent care. they shake it off. Man, my shoulder, my neck's hurting. It's going to get better. It's going to get better. Then they get busy. Still hurting. 6 weeks go by. They're still hurting. All right. What do? And they start calling the insurance company. Insurance company starts saying, yeah, I'm going to go get treated. Well, they don't have the money to get treated. Or just send us they'll string them along for another 2 or 3 weeks. All of a sudden, you're 2 months in, 2.5 months, and you've never received medical treatment for your wreck. Okay? What's the insurance company going to do? What's that law, that defense lawyer going to say one day? Just say, they weren't hurt. This wreck couldn't have caused that neck pain and shoulder pain. They didn't go get treated for 8 weeks.
Yeah.
It took them 2.5 months to see their first doctor. And then they met with a lawyer, and the lawyer set them up with a doctor. This is not good. That's an example of how someone that's just trying their best to be patient and wait can get screwed.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So
you don't get rewarded for being tough and rubbing some dirt on and then keep things moving.
Yeah, yeah. Like you tell your kid, you know, stop crying and get up and shake it off type of thing.
Yeah. Well, and that same example, that person could need neck surgery or shoulders. That person could have a torn shoulder neck surgery and not even know it.
Yeah, because it may not feel bad in the initial shock of the accident, but later on, yeah.
And some people will settle their case in the first week with the insurance company. The insurance company will offer them $1,500, $2,000, make it real easy for them to do a digital signature on the, mm-hmm. on an email, and they sign their life away. Next thing you know, a week later, they can't get out of bed. Sorry, case is settled. It's in writing. Never sign anything. Never sign anything.
So that brings me to my next question is, what is the best thing to do in the event that you get into an accident, but you're trying to be a good person, like that guy who doesn't want to, you know, get anything involved. He thinks he can shake it off. What would have been the best case scenario? Like, what would have been the thing to do first? You hear, at least from the billboard attorneys, you know, don't call your insurance first. Call me.
Right.
And you're like, well, why? Or like, don't call the police first. Call me. Like, you know,
what? It's because insurance companies are sneaky. All right. And they're recording everything you say. Mm-hmm. And so if you talk to them within hours of a wreck and you're still jacked up on adrenaline, your adrenaline's going, you're on the side of the interstate and trucks are flying by and your heart rate's up, you're just lucky to be alive. And so you talk to the insurance companies to try to get a rental and get your car repaired. You're just trying to open a claim, thinking that that's the right thing to do because that's what your grandma told you to do. Mm-hmm. You're just lucky to be. So they ask you, "Are you okay?" Yeah, I'm okay. I'm good. You hurt? In your mind, because you're tough, Ben, you're thinking, "Well, I'm not losing a limb. I'm not bleeding out. So I'm not really hurt." That's all being recorded. And that will be used against you. What you say can and will be used against you. Oh,
God.
All right? So the next day you wake up and you can't get out of bed. Well, you already told them that you weren't hurt. All right? Now, a good lawyer, we can unwind that. But it will certainly be an uphill battle. Right? So what I would do.
God.
I know, I got you. Look, it didn't happen to you.
Yeah, right? Thank God.
You're getting this. This is prehabilitation. This is preventative medicine for you and everyone else that hasn't been involved in a wreck. And I don't wish it on my worst enemy. I really don't. So, number one, call 911. All right, you need a police report. So I make the example, and this is on some of my social medias. A lot of times people will try to just exchange information and go about their merry own way, right? So in a scenario, you rear end me, you come up to the car, you say, "Chaz, this doesn't look real bad. Look, man, I'll pay for everything. Here's my insurance information. Let's just go about our way." Well, what happens when you get home and you tell your wife? What happens when you start thinking about your insurance premiums going up with you being at fault? Your memory starts to change, right? You may not, that person may not answer their phone. There's things change, right? And so you want the police to come out and take a report and put all the insurance information, say what happened, maybe even take pictures, conduct a preliminary investigation, catch things on their body cam, on the dash cam, because now you're preserving evidence, right? I never, ever, I don't care how minor the impact is, get a police report. Call the cops. You pay taxes, that's their job. Let them come out, be a neutral party, and conduct the investigation. Okay? So that's number one, 911. Number two, if you're physically able to move around, so like you're not, some people, the airbags deploy, they're knocked out, they're not in any condition to do anything other than going to the emergency room.
Right.
But if you're able to move around, take some pictures, take some videos. There might be a witness that saw how it happened, and he's like, sorry, man, I gotta run. Grab your phone, take a video, and say, sir, what's your name? What's your phone number? What's your address? What did you see? Thank you. Boom. Now you got a witness. Because a lot of times witnesses leave because they don't want to wait 45 minutes for the cops to get
right,
there.
Right.
So try to document some evidence with your phone via photo or video. Number three, you should get medical treatment if you're hurting. All right. That day, the next day. Day after that. All right. Within the first week.
Yeah.
Within the first week, you want some type of medical treatment if you are hurting. Because it creates a causation link of the wreck with the injury.
And you're hurting. Like, and why wouldn't you not want to go to the
hospital? Yeah, right. So let's just step back from the trees from the forest. Like, and you're hurting. You should get medical care.
Yeah.
Right? You should get some medication. Because
there might be internal bleeding if it's an accident that's bad.
And you have something called a duty to mitigate your damages. You have to put the tarp on top of your roof to prevent the house from flooding. If the shingles blow off, that's mm-hmm. called a duty to mitigate. You have the same thing with your body. You need to get treatment and good treatment as soon as possible. And then four, let me go back.
Yeah, yeah.
Urgent care, emergency room. All right, emergency rooms are expensive.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah, I know.
So if you have some internal bleeding, like if you had some bad trauma, you have trouble walking, you're having a head issue or you're dizzy, go to the emergency room by all means.
Yeah, because I mean it's the quickest way to get in and out.
It's the quickest way to get in and out. Now that ambulance ride is $2,500. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know that, but that's,
I thought it was four.
Four.
I don't know. I just don't want to know.
It seems like it goes up every.
I don't want to know the
every
deal.
Couple weeks, but. Other than the emergency room, urgent care is a good alternative. You're looking at a $400 bill versus a $3,000 to $5,000 bill. All right. So the urgent care would be where most injuries, right, would be more appropriate, even more appropriate than the emergency room.
Okay. Okay. But like if you have, obviously, if you have broken bones and all that, an urgent care is not going to be able to take care of that, right? Yeah.
No.
It'd be an emergency room. But if you're feeling like lightheaded or if you just have like a headache, stuff like that, that'd be urgent care.
And the urgent care will be glad to point you to the emergency room if they can't take care
of
you.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. If you can walk around, like the emergency room is good at plugging holes.
Yeah.
They're good at fixing bone breaks. They're good at checking internal organs for trauma. I feel like the emergency room, you kind of know it when you need it.
Yeah.
Right? You know it when you need it. You know when you see it. But urgent care is kind of everything else.
I feel like 10 years ago, the emergency room was the urgent care.
Yeah.
I used to go to the emergency room all the time. If we were feeling very, you know, I don't want to say severely ill, but like if there was something that just didn't feel right, especially if you have a kid, like a newborn versus, you know, a teenager, like you go to the emergency room a little bit more often. It's at least 10 years ago we did. And all the people in there were just hanging out. You know, going to the vending machine, like nobody was bleeding. And right. then you'd have the occasional ambulance that come through and then people are rushed back.
Right.
But other than that, like it felt like an urgent care. It's like this could have been done with, you know, the whole saying in the office, this could have been an email. Like you could have just went to the urgent.
Well, Ben, as the king of developing Lafayette, I bet every week you're putting a new post about a new urgent care opening.
Well, I know for a couple of years there was several urgent cares. And then the new one in Scott, it's technically an emergency room, but the standalone one, that one is really cool. You talked about ambulance. What about air lifting? That's got to be, what, $10,000, $15,000?
$35,000.
Oh, God.
$35,000. Yeah.
And how do you determine if that is what you need?
The police officers make
a, oh my God.
I think it has to do with the severity of the injury and the location. right? So like if you're out in the country, right, the ambulance might be an hour away.
Mm-hmm.
It might be better to use the air med. It's all about the severity of the injury. They have their codes. There's a code process. But yeah, it's not cheap. And then, you know, I've talked to some people from Acadian. It's like, well, we have to pay a pilot to be on standby.
Yeah.
Like it's not just that lift. It's like you're kind of subsidizing that, the whole process, right?
Yeah, because the pilot's not just sitting at home, you know, playing Call of Duty and paid via social media.
No, it's built in Slack. That guy's there all day. I don't know how often they're dispatched, but he might be days without being dispatched. But when that phone rings or that signal's given, he has to get in there and head there.
Mm. Okay. So we're getting close to time here. Before we went live, we were talking about TikTok attorneys and lawyers. Yeah. And before we talk about TikTok specifically, I saw on TikTok not to talk about it specifically, but they're not going to talk about it. Okay. But a video that I saw on TikTok was this teacher educating her class. It was like a elementary class or middle school class about the differences between a lawyer and an attorney. And I had no clue that there was a difference.
I'd be interested to attend that class because I don't know the difference.
Okay. So apparently, we did some Googling, and apparently a lawyer cannot, my information is based off of TikTok, so take it with a grain of salt. But a lawyer cannot practice law, but can offer law services. And an attorney can practice law because they've passed the bar, but a lawyer has not passed the bar.
I use those terms interchangeably.
A lot of people do.
Just like cop and policeman. Like, to me, those are two of the same.
Okay.
And that's certainly not true. Like, I call myself a lawyer. I call myself an attorney. Like, I don't think there's a distinction that's made, at least not here in Louisiana, of a lawyer is someone who didn't pass the bar, an attorney. I call myself a lawyer.
Yeah. And I think that, like you said, it's interchangeable. I've said lawyer, I said attorney, and I just thought attorney was like the fancy way to call yourself a lawyer. Yeah. But like, hey, I'm an attorney.
It depends in context. It just rolls off the tongue easier some different times. But Ben, if you're going to buy everything you see on TikTok, I have something to sell you back here, my man. You cannot trust anything on TikTok.
I know. Trust me. I know. I've seen some stuff on there that I'm like, I don't know if I believe that.
No.
And then thankfully, the way TikTok works, it's amazing. The algorithm does wonders.
Yeah.
A new video, a couple of videos later, will say, hey, did you see this video, like a stitch of this? And then these people go to try it, and they say, look, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
Like, it's like a TikTok trend, like, hey, do this, and it's supposed to do this, and they try it, and like, no, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
I'm like, crap, I was hoping it would, because that looked like a really cool trick.
Right.
Okay, so TikTok lawyers, attorneys, whatever you want to call them, interchangeable, basically, these guys that show you a clip of an accident or a scenario and tell you about that scenario and what could have actually gone wrong or how the law works in the case of that scenario for you to win in that case. And so what do you make of those? Because obviously you're making short form video content. Yeah. So you're kind of, in a way, having some dabbling into that world. But what is your input and your advice for people with those lawyers?
The stitch videos are entertaining. I've tried to sit down and make some of those stitch videos because I find them interesting. I wouldn't agree with everything that I've seen other lawyers put out with respect to some of their opinions on who is at fault and this and that. I just know, like, to thy own self be true, I'm not super animated. And so I'm not the guy, like, I got this monotone kind of voice, kind of laid back guy. So I can't be like, whoa, did you see that, dude? They took a right and you need to take a left. Like, I can't get up for it. So I just stay away from those. Like, my style is, and I've done some front face that, hey, you've been hurt in a car wreck, you need to do these four things. Like, I've done a lot of those. But really now, I just use my podcast clips to feed all my content. Yeah.
And it's good information. There's like one piece that I watched recently, which I thought was, I feel like I should have known this, but like it's something you don't think about because I'm not over here getting big cash outs from an injury settlement ever, you know? But you had a podcast with Marcus Mier, and one of the clips I saw was, is getting a tax settlement check taxable or is it free and clear? And to find out that it was, I think, free and clear, like you don't owe taxes on it, was amazing. I'm like, if I ever get hurt, I am not giving anything to the government for that.
It's amazing. Shout out to Marcus Mier. He was a great guest. Yeah. And I saw him earlier.
And he's also a part sponsor of the podcast because this studio is in their office space. And so we rent this spot. Yeah, so cool. Shout out. Yeah.
So in the video, I say, you know, getting a settlement, personal injury settlement, is like a good day on Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah, yeah.
But on Wheel of Fortune, you have to pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
A personal injury settlement, you pay no taxes, which is crazy if you think about it, because it is a lump sum of money, tax-free. And so $50,000 is really like almost $100,000 if you factor in taxes. So it would take some people a lifetime to have that much money in their savings at one time. They also have to be very careful what to do with that money. I spend a lot of time with my clients counseling them. Like, look, this is you paid the price for this, and we were able to get you this sum of money. I would direct you to look at NBA players, boxers, football players that have gone completely broke, and you need a plan, and start thinking about that plan, and tell me
bigger house,
plan. Bigger house. I mean, you know, at least that would be somewhat of an asset, right? Your cousin coming from God knows where asking you for money is not an asset. You will never get that money back, my friend. He will never pay you back. And you would imagine the crazy things that people have.
Oh, I know.
To deal with them.
Oh,
yeah. Because a lot of times people, it varies by the client, but some people have never had that type of money before. And it's relative. Some people have never had a check for $3,000 before. Some people have never had a check for $10,000, $50,000, $100,000. What do you do with it? Well, money, and you could talk to Marcus about this, money is scary.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different set of problems. Before, the problems were being hurt, dealing with doctor's appointments, dealing with a lawyer, dealing with the uncertainty. Now, when you get money, it's like, I've never had to deal with this before. That's its own set of challenges. You remember the rap song, Mo Money, Mo Problems? Mm-hmm. Like, that's true in a way. And so I try to do my best to educate people and put them in the right way. And shout out to the podcast. I plug to the podcast. Like, I bring on guys who can talk about money, like Marcus, like CPA, and AJ Toss, who says, like, this is the five things a client should do when they recover money. Number one, two, three, four, five. So that's been a good source. Like, the podcast has been another way of educating people at scale.
Yeah, I think it's a great tool. And obviously, I'm pretty sure some of these responses from you today will make it in a clip or two.
Yeah, hopefully.
So while we are getting close to wrapping up, I guess I want to have another question or two. So what was the most bizarre case that you've ever handled in your history so far?
Ooh.
If you can speak on it. Like, I know there's some, you know, some things you can't talk on, but like, is there something super bizarre, or would it be?
I think it was interesting whenever I was a young lawyer. As a young lawyer, you take cases that nobody else wants.
You take the bottom of the barrel stuff.
I'm in a one room office suite in the oil center that I'm paying $200 a month for.
Yeah,
I have a laptop, a desk, and a couch. All right, who is sending me cases? Lawyers. So people would call lawyers, like personal injury lawyers, people that were like actually doing well, and they were trying to like help their client out and say, "Oh, dude, I got just the lawyer for you. Call Chaz." And so that in my early career, the first couple of years when I was just trying to get my feet wet, that's when I would get the real crazy cases. And I remember like going to Franklin in a trial, like going all the way to trial and on a case of a World War II aluminum boat that this guy had found, and there was an issue of ownership, and just to see me in Franklin in the courthouse with a suit on and trial arguing about this aluminum boat from World War II that was supposed to be in the inauguration of Lyndon B. Johnson. It was bizarre. Like, what am I even doing here? Right. And I could tell you 50 stories like that. I don't want to bore the audience, but it's when now I only do personal injury. And so it's a lot of the similar facts. And there are some interesting aspects to each one, but early on is when you really see the crazy stuff come out.
Oh, yeah.
And family law. Look, God bless any family lawyer. Right. You will hear things and you will see things and you will be part of things that you never thought would go on in a household.
I could only imagine. I feel like it would be.
No, you can't.
Maybe not. But I feel like an episode of Judge Judy is just the tip of the iceberg on that.
That is just.
Obviously, it's TV.
That is TV, but I could be way better than Judge Judy with some of the things I've seen.
I'd love to see like reenactments of the craziest stuff, like the aluminum boat situation. That sounds
yeah.
Funny.
And look, that's just off the top of my head. My memory is not like super great because I put so much more stuff in it on a daily basis. But if you gave me like on the way back to my office, I'm like, this is what I should have talked about, and be 20 times better.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I've seen so much crazy stuff in 14, almost 15 years of practice. You wouldn't believe.
Okay.
And I was a public defender for 5 years too. So being in, going in jail and talking to those guys and seeing some of the things, it was insane.
What about like fraudulent cases? Have you ever experienced a case where somebody tried to fraud an insurance company or like try to fake a case? Like, for example, the person that gets hit from behind comes out, oh, my neck, my back.
I have not been part of that, but I do know of a fraudulent ring where many people were indicted in New Orleans for staging wrecks.
Wow. Yeah. It was a
whole operation, and it happened multiple times. And they got wind of it, and the feds came in, and people went to jail.
Wow.
Yeah. It may be a movie one day because there was a lot of interesting facts going on.
Okay.
Yeah. It happens.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah.
I have not seen it. I have not been part of it, but it does happen. That's the ugly side, right? I mean, people steal from church, you know? Like, what is it, the answer to 99 out of 100 questions, money? Or like, where there is money, there will be people, there will be bad actors.
Yeah,
you know, and I'll use the bad teachers, good cops, bad church, priests, anywhere there are bad actors. You know, it's not all sunshine and rainbows, but you have to have a certain level of integrity and to stay above it and rise above it. You know,
awesome. Well, I think that is all I got. We're at about an hour.
I had a good time.
Yeah, man, I had a good time too. There was a few things that I definitely got some answers on, of just questions that I've always had, that if I could sit with a lawyer, an attorney, whatever you want to call it, and have those answers given to me, I feel like, this was good and it was productive. We could probably sit for another hour or two going down the list of different scenarios and questions and all that good stuff, but I know we have other things that we got to do. It's around lunchtime. I'm getting hungry. I'm pretty sure you guys are as well. Where can people learn more about you?
Check me out on Instagram, Chaz Roberts Law. I'm also on TikTok, same handle, Facebook. And check out the podcast, Law Have Mercy. I bring on lawyers in different areas, and I've created basically a library of all the different areas of law, and I got cool friends, and they come on and we talk law, and hopefully it answers some of your questions for free. So Law Have Mercy, and on Instagram, Chaz Roberts Law.
All right, y'all go check them out. I put the website up on the video as well. So if you're listening, you would have seen that. Or if you're watching, you would have seen that. If you're listening, ChazRobertsLaw.com. Chaz, great to have you on, man. Maybe in a few months we can have you back on. Maybe I can have a few more questions locked in the chamber to fire off and see what you deliver. But yeah, hopefully your business does well, keeps doing well, and you grow. And I look forward to not seeing a billboard, but maybe seeing a sign by the road, maybe. I don't know.
Baby steps.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, well, that is it, guys. Chaz, thank you for coming on. And Lath is in the background. You can't see him, but he's there for support for Chaz. So thank you guys for coming on. And I look forward to seeing how your business grows. And yeah, I wish you all the success.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me. Keep doing great work, man.
I appreciate it. All right, guys, that is it. We'll let you have your Friday back. And if you enjoyed the show, give it a like, give it a share. And it's also on YouTube. It's also on another Facebook page. And I will try to get some TikTok clips updated on the T-Podcast TikTok channel. But other than that, y'all have a great day, and we'll see you on the next one.